This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go out to the Progressive Guest Line. Progressive Insurance, good for home, auto, RV, boat, and more. What you want to do with your home and auto and have in common, it's Progressive that protects them both. Bundle today at Progressive.com. Lee Ellis of The Athletic hosts No Dunks Podcast. We are here, NBA Finals, Thursday night, San Francisco, Golden State, and Boston. How are you, my friend?
Very well, Tony. Thanks very much for having me.
I have got to ask you, from the standpoint of the Celtics-Miami Heat series, before we get to the finals, I think this is one of the most bizarre series I have ever seen. It felt like there was just, every game was one moment that a team just took advantage of the other team and just locked it in. It got close in Game 7, but no team ever got a rhythm. What did you make of that series?
Yeah, it wasn't actually all that easy to watch, I didn't think, because of what you say there. Like, one team would blow one team out by 30, and you think, okay, that team's in control, and then they'd lose by 30 the next game.
Yeah.
And then we had some other weird low-scoring output games here from the Heat, and Jimmy Butler had a couple of 40-point games. So it was very hard to figure out exactly, you know, who the better team was, because they both kind of dominated each other at different times. And even there in Game 7, where it looked like the Celtics were home and you could start getting ready for the finals, and then all of a sudden Jimmy Butler has a chance to almost, you know, probably win the game and steal the series, even though they were the home court team and they had home court there in Game 7. But he nearly did it. He nearly pulled off the miracle. But instead, the Celtics hang on and they advance. So, I think it was one of those series where both teams kind of mirrored each other, and they were both defensively very sound. They had a lot of good offensive players going forward. But I think for the Miami Heat, we saw they just couldn't really get that reliable second and third scoring option throughout the series. Jimmy was great, but then he had some knee injury issues there to deal with. Tyler Hero, another guy, you know, sixth man of the year, he was out of he missed a lot of games there with injuries. Even Bam Adebayo, their young star, he's not really a scorer. He's more a sort of guy who can get you a few points here and there, but his numbers were down across the playoffs, and I think that's really what caught up with the Heat, is they just couldn't get that guy who could step in and contribute a consistent 20, 25 points. And ultimately, I think that's where they fell apart. They were relying too heavily on Jimmy, and they couldn't shoot threes in this series, and that was where they came up short. But having said all that, again, I mean, Jimmy Butler with 20 seconds to go almost stole the series for them. So it was it's a weird one for sure.
What is the state of the Celtics? This is a tough seven-game series. There were some good things. There were some things that they lacked or struggled with. What is the state of the Celtics in your mind as they head to Thursday's Game 1?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question, because I think, you know, you've had a tough seven-game series here, obviously, against the Heat, seven before that against the Milwaukee Bucks, and then they had a pretty convincing and dominant four-game sweep of the Brooklyn Nets. But I think you're starting to see just those amount of games starting to catch up with them a little bit, because Robert Williams in and out of lineup clearly didn't look 100% healthy. Marcus Smart has missed a couple of games as well, because he's out there, you know, all over the place anyway. I'm not surprised that he's got a variety of injuries. And even Tatum and Brown are sort of shown at times they weren't 100%. Jaylen Brown, I know his hamstring has been bothering him, and Jason Tatum's sort of a shoulder issue. And then on top of all that, you know, the Sunday night they played, so they get home back to Boston sometime early yesterday morning, and I believe they have to fly out today to San Francisco because media day for the final starts tomorrow. So they've got a pretty quick turnaround here, and you've got to fly across country against a team that's been sitting at home pretty, coming off a fairly easy series against the Dallas Mavericks, and the Warriors are all fresh. They're all healthy. It seems like they don't have any real problems at all in terms of their playing personnel. And then you're sort of seeing, you know, Klay Thompson really found his form. Draymond Green's been looking great again. Jordan Poole's been fantastic for them. So where it stands right now, I think for these first two games, it's a pretty tough task here for the Celtics to even get close to stealing one, I think. But if they can, then maybe the series can sort of, you know, they can take it back to Boston and get some momentum there. But right now, it certainly favors everything is in Golden State's favor right now. They just have, you know, also when you look at the way that the Celtics, the last two series have played against the Jimmy Butler and then a Giannis, and of course before that a Kevin Durant, they had one really dominant scoring player on each team. Now they go to the Warriors, who play completely differently. They spread the floor out. They've got multiple different guys who can score and shoot and get to the basket. And that Celtics defense is now going to be scattered. They can't sort of lock in on the one guy like they did with Durant or Giannis. Instead, they're like, all right, well, who's going to cover Clay? Who's covering Steph? Who's covering Andrew Wiggins, you know, when he's out there on the perimeter? So this is just a completely different look here for the Celtics. And they've got a lot of work to do, I think, here for these first two games to just try to keep these, keep them competitive, firstly. And then, as I say, if they can steal one, great. But I think that's going to be a pretty tall task for them.
We'd love to talk about Golden State and their offense. Defensively, they're not a bad team. Where are they defensively?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Their defense is probably still overlooked, I should say, not overrated. Overlooked because we look at their offense and just think, man, all these guys can shoot and score and they get out in transition and they're very difficult to stop. But defensively, they have been excellent in the playoffs. And they've been getting really good contributions from some of their lesser-known guys, like Kevon Looney, who's been fantastic for them. You know, really, you know, he understands his role on this team is not to score and shoot. He'll fill in the blanks when he can there, but defensively, get out, rebound, contest shots, and make sure you're a presence on that end, because that's where he can be effective. Draymond Green, we know, you know, defensively, he's incredible. And then Klay Thompson, probably one of the most underrated defenders in the game for a big guard. He's quite agile, and he can get out there, and he can cover like a Jason Tatum or a Jaylen Brown. He may even get one of those assignments in the first couple of games here. So, yeah, this is the other problem here for the Celtics. I like their offense. Jason Tatum, I mean, he's an all-NBA first teamer this year. He's been incredible in the playoffs. He won the MVP of the last series. And Brown and Smart, now Horford's had his moments also during the playoffs here. But, again, they probably haven't faced... Maybe Milwaukee. I guess Miami to a different degree there, but they haven't faced defenses quite so switchy like this, where the Warriors can have two or three guys really can match up defensively well against Boston's two or three best players as well there. So it's going to be a real work effort here from the Celtics to just try to put pressure on the Warriors on either end of the floor, and that's going to be a tough task for Ime Udoka here with only, again, you know, a day or two really to prepare his team, go over some film and have them ready to go on Thursday night on the road against a team that's just been sitting at home for the last week waiting for them.
I want to get into a deeper dive on Golden State, because we see this in other sports where a team is really good, everything is coming together, they're well coached, they've got the right players, and they take advantage of everybody within their division or conference or whatever trying to play catch up. And Golden State certainly had that, and even when they added, you know, when they added Durant, it took them to the next level. But then they disappear, and when they come back, here's Utah, here's Phoenix, here's Luka, here's Jokic, here's LeBron in Los Angeles. There's a whole dynamic that's changing in the West while they're out recovering, and yet here they are again. How do we look at them in what they've accomplished this year? It's one thing to take advantage when everybody's chasing you, but to come back and do what they've done, this is remarkable.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the credit here has to go to Steph Curry and his leadership, because at no point at any time in the last 7-8 years of this run has Steph Curry ever tried to flex his muscles and be like, listen, I'm the two-time MVP, I'm the star, I'm the greatest shooter the game's ever seen. I want more attention, I want more shots, I want more respect, and I want all the money and things like that. Because when Kevin Durant came along, you know, even Steph Curry, who's, you know, the face of that franchise, was more than happy to sort of share the fame and the glory and the success, because he knew what Kevin Durant could do for that team. And so that's, to me, the key to this Golden State Warriors success, is at no point have the egos really come in and dominated or taken over or created that fight there. I mean, we've seen in the past, of course, Draymond and Steve Kerr have gotten into a little bit. Draymond and Kevin Durant had a little bit of their beef. But it never really, you know, it's like that Tim Duncan reference that's made about Steph Curry. Like, it never sort of got to the point in San Antonio during their dynastic run where Tim Duncan was going crazy and, you know, acting like a diva. He was always about winning. And they brought in so many role players over the years who just came in and were effective. Maybe they picked up a championship two or less. But ultimately, that core of Duncan, Popovich, Manu Ginobili, and Tony Parker stayed the same. And you just never felt that any of those three guys were the ones really trying to use their ego to try to, you know, be the one stand out amongst the other guys. And I think that's what you're seeing from, you know, Steph and Clay especially. And then you've got Draymond, who's obviously been there for quite a while. And then even someone like Kevon Looney, who I mentioned, we sort of think about of him as a role player, and he is. But he's been there a long time. And I think that's also a symbol of what that team is. It's like, listen, everyone here contributes. It's all about winning. It's all about doing it as a team. And I think that's why you're seeing the Warriors, again, heavy favorites in the finals, again, without Kevin Durant, because ultimately Kevin Durant made them better, but it wasn't Kevin Durant wasn't the one that made them the Warriors that they are today. I think that's because of what Steph Curry, Steve Kerr, and largely Clay and Draymond have been able to establish over these last, 6 to 8 years.
And Steph Curry, if he wins this, it's ring number 4. But even if he doesn't, he still has 3 and 6 NBA Finals appearances. But his legacy is beyond that. Can you kind of get into just what he has meant into the way basketball has changed since he started showcasing the skill of being able to shoot threes?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Steph Curry, for me, I know there was a stat out. It was a while ago. I can't quite remember where I saw it, but he was impacting the game in the same way Shaq was in his prime Lakers days, as far as if he touched the ball, the chances of the team scoring were significantly increased. And Steph did it the opposite way of Shaq. Of course, Shaq just, pounded guys under the hoop. Steph's doing it from 25, 35 feet away, which was just remarkable. And, he's done all that. And, he's a three-time champ, as we mentioned there, but he hasn't got a finals MVP trophy. And you would sort of think by now he would have at least one of those, maybe sure. Even two. But Andre Iguodala won the first one, and then Durant won the other two. But, again, I just don't think that those things really matter all that much to Steph. Sure, he'd love it. He'd love to throw it in the trophy cabinet, but he's got the 3 championships, he's got the 2 MVPs, and he's been on the same team his entire career, just further establishing his legacy as a team player, even though he's a superstar basketball player at the same time. And that's where I think we're seeing that in pretty much every major sport these days, is guys get to a certain level, and then they're like, hang on a minute, I deserve more money, and I deserve more fame, and I want to be the star, and I want all the attention on me. Whereas Steph, he's a family man, he's a father. We know, we see his kids often at the game there. He's been with his wife, Aisha, I believe, since high school. So he's very well grounded, and I think he understands that basketball is a part of his life, but it's not the only part of his life. He's got so many other things in his life that he can go out there and excel, he can go out there and win, but he doesn't have to be only about basketball. And remember, Steph's also had, for all the glory that he's had, he's also the one who we talk about and when the for the Warriors, who blew the 3-1 lead in the 73-9 season. So it's almost like that maybe balanced and humbled out his entire sort of ego in that sense, where he knows that nothing is guaranteed. It doesn't matter how good things are looking, you don't automatically go on to win the championship. So those sorts of things, if you tell the entire complete Steph story, maybe that's all why he's been able to remain the sort of person he is right now, because he knows that despite the highs that he's had, he's also been a part of, probably the biggest and most memorable low in the NBA Finals history, because no one had ever done that from 3-1 down, lost the finals there. And, of course, it was in the most brutal circumstances, where the Warriors lost Game 7 at home. So, yeah. I think that's part of the way that Steph is. He's a very humble person. I've been fortunate to meet him several times, shoot around with him. And you would not think that this guy is one of the most famous athletes in the world. You'd think he's just another guy out there playing basketball, having fun, because that's the way that he comes across.
Lee, always good talking to you, my friend. We'll catch up with you down the road when we get these finals underway. Thank you, my friend, as always.
Anytime, Tony. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Lee Ellis of The Athletic, host of No Dunks Podcast. Check that out. Good stuff on the NBA. And just fascinating. I mean, again, as we talked about earlier today, I mean, think about this. I mean, Boston is certainly impressive in their run. But Jokic, Morant, Doncic, these are 3 of the youngest superstars the league has. MVP, Morant, again, Doncic, next level star. Golden State went through all 3 of them. All 3 of them to get to where they are now. They're still around. They are still around. I mean, 8 years is a long time in sports. It's a long time in sports. And again, I know they had a lull, but here they are back in the finals. It's Tony D, Ron Culver, Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.